Hello there, everybody, and welcome to this live session, the Sunday live session of your C19 group coaching program. So we've got a few things to get through today. As always, we'll try to get it all fit in within the 1 hour. So I'm just going to share my screen straight away. As always, this session is being recorded. It will be loaded up onto your Trello card after I receive the recording. All complete, and please participate with questions and comments all the way throughout as well. So the first thing I wanted to mention about what we're going to be covering today is there are four main areas. One, the data practice assessment. Number two, Wednesday's guest speaker. Number three, it's time to get started up again. So if you haven't reopened your doors, I strongly urge you to do so, and I've got a restart pack for you. And also, we're going to our main topic today is team culture. So let's go through things one at a time. You will see under the agenda items in today's online coaching session card, the dental practice assessment. So when you click on that link, it takes you to one of my forms. And this form is a useful way of identifying areas within your practice that you want to concentrate on and improve upon to gain greater success over the coming months and years. I encourage you to move through it. If you are at a bit of a loss of where to start, you've got maybe a bit more spare time on your hands because you are functioning in level two and you're not as busy as you are normally, and you've got your staff there that you want to make sure they're continuing to engage in the practice. So this goes through various areas of your business, a bit of a practice profile, the practice environment, what the facade looks like, landscaping and gardening, and you just highlight at what point your happiness level is at. It goes through your team itself, your foundational policies, what your current systems are and what systems you may like to introduce, and et cetera, et cetera, a whole bunch of stuff. And so it's designed that when you complete it, you can send me a copy. I think that's a useful thing because if there's things of obvious note that I can provide resources for, a bit of advice around, then I can see it and I can send it straight through to you. So I encourage you to complete that form on that link just within the agenda of today. And actually, I might also put that link. Let me do this. Send, I need a shareable link, copy that, just in case that when I click this off the agenda list, that it is still here. So it's under activity, under practice assessment. So go ahead and do that. You might want to do it by yourself or with the team if you prefer. And that will help identify areas of the practice that you can start concentrating on straight away, just to improve your customer service, your team, your practice itself, and your systems. The next thing I wanted to quickly tick off the list was Wednesday's guest speaker. So Wednesday's card is sitting here, the live session number four. And within that, you'll see the registration link, just like it was today. And the guest speaker is Andrew Lee of Health Practice Digital. I've got the website link there so you can have a look prior to the meeting. And Andrew and I have been working together. We haven't been doing any joint projects together or anything like that. We've just been collaborating on how we can provide assistance to dental communities when it comes to things that are a bit beyond our expertise, unless you've got a particular interest in it, and that's how do we promote online. So Andrew Lee is a really top guy. He's such an easy guy to get along with. He is so passionate about helping people in their particular space, and he's been working with a lot of practices. He's got a lot of case presentations to let us know about what other practices are doing and what kind of results they're achieving as well. And as we've gone into level two, I'm sure that level one is not too far away. So it is a good time to start thinking about, let's fill those books. And if we've got sections of our community that aren't running back to us now, it's going to leave gaps in the book. And those sort of sections to the community are those that have no work, unfortunately, so can't afford to come along and get their dental treatment done. The elderly as well, we're encouraging elderly to still stay at home. And sometimes even once the level one restrictions are back in place again, then they will be reticent about coming back in. Their family members and themselves may be anxious to make sure they stay at home. So there's going to be chunks of the community that aren't going to be coming back in. And we need to fill those spaces with people who are at low risk of COVID-19 that do require treatment, either recalls or incomplete treatment to be done. We're calling those people, trying to get them in, but we also want to restart that new patient flow as well. And so Andrew may have some great advice for you, I'm sure he does, but it may give you some wonderful ideas on what to do moving forward. And so Andrew will be with us for the first half of the meeting on Wednesday. And if there's a lot of questions and answers and he needs to be here longer, he's happy to be here longer as well. So there's going to be a couple of things on the agenda next time, but Andrew's presence is going to take the primary role there. If you have anything to add, as always, you are completely free to add items to the agenda and any questions that you may have for Andrew as well. The next pet part of the session today, it's going to take up a bit of time, is the restart pack. This morning as I was waking up, it's the time of day that I get most of my ideas, just during those that kind of waking half hour. And my mind is a little bit awake, a little bit not awake, dozing off and on. And if I just allow myself in that space, it's just all these things happen, and the minute I get up in the morning, I can't wait to have my shower and get going because I've got all this energy for the new ideas that I've got. And I had this idea for today's session that I thought I would share with you. I've been hearing a lot about some practices that are absolutely getting back on board, but also others that are remaining closed. The concern that I have is that the longer you remain closed, the greater your chances of shifting your business into something that's not as viable. Because when we restart again, there's every chance that it might be a bit slower because we've got those sections of the community, those that can't afford it, which is a larger group now, and the elderly that are reticent about coming back in again. So even when we start up, it may not be at the busyness that we had previously. I'm going to be talking about this at some point, either through my next article with the Australasian Dental Practice Magazine, but that won't come out for a couple of months, or through a blog, and certainly I'll touch on it within these sessions as well, but I want to get my head around the figures more so. Just how long and what does it take to recover from the month to 2 months that we've had to, in effect, close a lot of our doors down or restrict practice quite substantially? What do we need to do? Are your goals shifting and changing for the rest of this financial year or for the revenue and for the next financial year? How long do you think it's going to go on for? I've heard people say this is going to have a 2-year impact for dental practices. I'm not quite sure if it's going to be that long. It certainly does depend on the management of those clinics. So I want to just implore upon you, if you aren't opening your doors and seeing as many patients as level 2 allows you to see, do consider the cost to that long term for your business. It just means you're going to be possibly in the hole for longer. It's going to take a longer period of time to recover. And you may have to really boost up and increase productivity for a number of months afterwards to counteract the losses that you've incurred. We are getting wonderful assistance from the government in terms of the JobKeeper. So there's subsidies for wages going on. We've probably delayed our mortgages and rents and all the rest of it as well. And despite all of that, we still need to make sure that we're getting back to a viability of business that we were used to before, because not many businesses can really stop functioning for 3 months and recover from that, because all of a sudden the supply company stops supplying you, your electricity gets cut off, and you know, if you don't pay staff, of course you can now with JobKeeper, but under normal circumstances, if you don't pay staff, that only lasts for a couple of weeks before they're hitting the bricks, understandably so. So I have put together this, there's a fresh card. You can click on the link here for the card. I've also got that card under the doing bit. So, and I've generated a new list here called the doing list, and I've called it the COVID-19 Level 2 Restart Pack. So hopefully if you do the stuff that's in this card, you and your team can feel confident in opening your doors again. So let's go through this. This will probably take a good 20 minutes to get through this. First of all, I've got a checklist here, then I've got some additional information and some attachments. Let's go through the checklist one by one. If you go through the checklist yourself at your practice, then you should feel quite confident in seeing all of your patients come back in through the front door. So first of all, put a sign on your front door, and I've got an attached sign here. And what that sign says is basically stop. We don't want everyone just flooding in through these front doors. We want to make sure only people at low to no risk of COVID-19 come in. So stop. If you have a cough or experiencing shortness of breath, have a fever or have returned from any overseas travel in the past 14 days, please do not go past this point. For information about the coronavirus, call that number. So this is something you can print out on an A4 sheet of paper, laminate it, blue tack it or tape it to your front door. All of these things are going to help put confidence in your team and your patients that you're doing everything you need to do to make the space a safe area. So that's the first thing. Second thing is patients to come to their appointment times alone unless another person is essential. So the key is to have as few people in the practice as possible. And one thing I did forget to add to this list, which I'll quickly add now, is consider having only one or some of your clinic rooms open. So maybe in level two, you still want to make sure that you are restricting the amount of people that are in the practice. That can be, if you're a patient, just come by yourself unless it's a child and the parent needs to be there or a carer needs to be there. And also, are we going to have split shifts still? Are we going to have just one surgery open out of the two or three? Or are we going to have two surgeries out of the four or five and restrict the number of people that are moving around within your practice? The third thing is screen all of your patients prior to arrival and upon arrival. With this checklist, I encourage you to sit down with your whole team and move through this together. Moving through this list together and implementing all of these processes will help your team have complete confidence in moving forward and seeing patients. Always know that we were never 100% safe prior to COVID-19. There was always the risk of catching a cold, a flu, or whatever. We always treated all of our patients as if they were infectious with something. And so we can go back to the same level of safety in our minds now that we were back in prior to COVID-19. So as I say, moving through this as a team, so important to get your whole team behind it and not having that trepidation about coming in because I may not be safe. They are absolutely as safe as they ever were coming into work, especially with the additional steps that you're taking. So screen all the patients prior to arrival and upon arrival. Only allow people into your practice who fall into the low risk group of having COVID-19. See the screening questions in activity. This is the key point. We are not, whereas before, if somebody had Hep B, they would just tick it on their form and we'd still see them. If they'd had a history of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, they would tick it on their form and we'd still see them. If anyone's got a sniffle, a cough, a temperature, we're not seeing them at the practice. We're encouraging all of those people to reappoint, stay away. And so that means we are reducing by an enormous amount any risk of a COVID-19 patient coming into the clinic and infecting anybody. So see the screening questions underneath activity. And so if your team are aware of the screening questions, whoever's making an appointment time will understand which ones to ask, which questions to ask. And I suggest writing these three questions down, laminating it, pinning it to the reception computer, and pinning it to the surgery computers. And so those three questions are handy for anyone to ask. The screening questions are, and a lot of this information has come directly from the Australian Dental Association site and the helpful pages that they've put out there for COVID-19 management. Call all patients a day prior to a planned appointment time and ask if they have returned from overseas or interstate travel in the past 14 days. Felt unwell, including but not limited to symptoms of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, and shortness of breath. Had any contact with a confirmed or suspected case of COVID-19 in the past 14 days. If the patient answers yes to any of these questions, then you advise that we can't go ahead with routine dental treatment today and we'll make another appointment time after 14 days after they have been through a bit of an isolation period to make sure the symptoms don't develop into COVID-19. And so there is that. So make use of those questions, make sure your whole team are truly aware of them and are asking them on a regular basis. Every time a patient makes an appointment time, they're asked those questions. Every time they have a reminder sent out to them, whether it's by SMS or telephone call, they're reminded about those three questions. And when they come in prior to getting dental treatment done, those questions are asked again. In the waiting room, remove all unnecessary items from the waiting room. Even though in the Australian Dental Association webinar, the part one of, practicing through a pandemic of COVID-19, they were saying with level two now, we can put the magazines back in the waiting room. But if you wanted to be really safe and sure and put that image and communicate that to your patients that we're taking additional steps, then feel free to remove all those unnecessary items in the waiting room and adjust your seating so all the seats are about a metre and a half away from each other. Have all your patients wait in the car in the waiting room rather than the waiting room. They call you upon arrival, and at that point you either say, yes, you can come straight on in, or I'll call you back in a minute or two once we've got the surgery all ready. And then if they don't even reside in the waiting room, they go straight to the front door to the surgery. The additional benefit to that as well is that the receptionist or nurse can meet the patient then at the front door. They're touching the door handles themselves and encouraging the patient to hand sanitize with the little pump hand sanitizer that's waiting there close or near to the front door. And that's that next point, put sanitizer at the front door. Upon entry to the surgery, have patient then wash their hands at the sink. That's an optional extra thing. I think if they've been waiting in the waiting room, that for example, they've hand sanitized, they go wait in the waiting room for 5 minutes, and then they go into the surgery. They may have coughed or sneezed during that time, wiped their nose, get them to wash their hands in the surgery, and then take a seat in the chair itself. Implement the next thing of the 20 to 30 second pre-procedural mouth rinse with either 1% hydrogen peroxide or 0.2% providone iodine or 0.2% chlorhexidine rinse. I've also heard that ozonated water is very effective as well, essential oil mouth rinse as well. So one of those things, just have it set up in your surgery and pre-procedure, get the patient to rinse for 20 to 30 seconds. And note the proper PPE. This is a crucial point. There's still a lot of confusion around this because there's been so much differing information for different things that we need for different levels of restrictions. The proper PPE for us now in level two, a lot of people are thinking we still need to be quite dramatic with that, and we don't. The proper PPE in level two is a level two surgical mask, eye protection, preferably when it actually seals around the eyes itself onto the skin, disposable gloves, no need for respirator masks, and no need for surgical gowns. Same as always, our required PPE for this stage has been advised to us that it's just what we would normally do. Now, in case you doubt me, which you're allowed to doubt me, I've attached up here a snippet of the video of the Australian Dental Association webinar. And I want to play it for you now, where she says, where it's clarified exactly what's required at this
stage. Thank you, Sharon. That all does make a lot of sense. But if we could just really break it down and simplify it, for a low-risk COVID-19 patient.
I just want to make sure that I've got, that you can hear. I often forget this. Share the computer sound and share the video. Let me restart that. Share. Sorry for that interruption.
Thank you, Sharon. That all does make a lot of sense. But if we could just really break it down and simplify it, for a low-risk COVID-19 patient, the most important parts of our additional precautions are all the things we're doing around the procedure, like our hand hygiene and pre-procedural mouth rinse and minimising aerosol, and putting on rubber dam if it's required. But as far as our PPE is concerned, it's not a requirement to have a P2 mask or a disposable gown. Is that correct?
Absolutely not. You use your level two surgical mask. You use your eye protection. So with your loops, you make sure you have side protection. You use your disposable gloves. And that is the normal PPE that we apply. And what I would say in the context of this, because we know many patients are asymptomatic if they are positive, that PPE together with those enhanced infection control measures that we're already undertaking, underlying that is an assumption that most patients could be at risk of COVID-19. So you're almost in those processes assuming that every patient that walks through the door could have COVID-19. Now, one of the other things that people often talk about, or there's been a lot of discussion about, is actual face shields. But if you think about if you've got your eye protection and your eye protection in the form of your loops or protective glasses for your dental assistants actually seal that area off around your eye so nothing can come in the sides, and not like my glasses I'm wearing now where things can come in through the side here. If you've got your mask that's well fitted around your nose and around your mouth, if you've got your gloves on, really the need for a face shield is not there, because you're also under level 2 restrictions limiting your aerosols. And when you are generating aerosols, you have already, one, got the patient to do a pre-procedural mouth rinse, and two, you're using your rubber dams. So the only aerosols you're creating are aerosols of the water and the air that is mixed through the handpiece or whatever. You're not aerosolizing the saliva, and you're not aerosolizing any blood or anything as well. Now, having said that, one of the things we have put in the level 2 restrictions is that the key principle of them is that you are undertaking procedures that are unlikely to generate aerosols, or when you're doing aerosols, you're using rubber dam. The rubber dam use is mandatory. You need to make sure your rubber dam is sealed well. If rubber dam can't be used, and you need to do the procedure, you're going to generate aerosols, then you cannot provide the procedure. That is the underpinning of level 2 restrictions.
Thank you, Sharon.
So you can see the amount of PPE that you require at this stage. If you're working to the guidelines of what the ADA say in level 2, you are quite safe using your standard level 2 masks, your standard eye protection as long as it's closing around the eyes. Mask, gloves, you don't need all the additional stuff, the respirators and the disposable surgical gowns either. And I hope it gives you confidence that I've done the mouth rinse, I've got the rubber dam under, so if I am using aerosols, it's actually very, very safe. So I hope, as I say, I'm not an infection control specialist or a dentist, but I do hope that you can have added confidence in opening your doors up as much as level 2 restrictions permit you to. It's all about making sure we remain as viable as possible. So that video is just under the attachments. I encourage you to share it with your whole team so they too can understand why you're so confident in opening your doors up a bit more. And if you've got that access within your CPD portal area, it's at the 28 and a half minute mark, that particular area, that particular snippet that I've just taken out, if you wanted the context of the whole thing, of the whole conversation. And always keep in mind too, and I've got it noted here, just keep in mind, we are only ever seeing very low risk COVID-19 people. We're not seeing medium risk and we're not seeing high risk. So again, just to understand that the people that are coming in have every possible chance of being absolutely healthy. Now, as for what the different risk levels are, I've got that down in the attachments as well. Within the ADA documentation, it says that moderate risk patients, it doesn't have anything as what low risk is. And so I imagine low risk is everybody that falls outside of moderate and high risk. Moderate risk patients are a suspect case returned traveller in self-isolation or contact of confirmed COVID-19 case practicing social distancing. High risk is symptomatic person awaiting results or close contact with confirmed COVID-19 case in self-quarantine. Our screening questions get rid of these two groups, and we're only seeing people that fall outside of it. Rubber dam isolation on teeth under aerosol treatment. Ensure you are well stocked. So do, it's one of those additional things that may end up having a lot of people buy it up. And so do make sure you've got plenty of frames, plenty of clamps, plenty of stock with all the rubber dam. Make sure that your receptionist is putting a 15-minute infection control time allowance between each appointment time, especially if it's going to be an aerosol appointment time, if it's just a review. If you've got more than one surgery, reviews can be, you know, you can bounce from room to room to room. So keep, make sure that you are allowing that additional time because you want to be able to go around and wipe, do the next stage, which is the environmental cleaning. So after every patient leaves the practice, do an environmental clean. Understand where the patient's likely touched in the waiting room, if they've been in the waiting room, at the reception area when they were paying for their appointment time, in the surgery when they were receiving the treatment, did they go to the bathroom, did they touch the front door, all of the areas, just become mindful of where the patient's been, wipe those surfaces down. It says here the type of bacterial alcohol-based wipes, sodium hypochlorite, what solution, any hospital-grade TGA-listed disinfectant that's commonly, that is used commonly against norovirus is also suitable. So you've got all the details there of how to wipe down once the surgery, once the patient's left the surgery. That 15-minute gap in between also prevents crossover of two strangers coming in and passing each other, which may make them feel a little bit less safe. Post on your website, waiting room, social media pages, information for the patients. And so again, see the content under activity. I mentioned this at the last online session. This is the message for patients, so you can feel free just to copy and paste this onto your website, onto your social media pages. You may want to have it into an email form, so whoever gets an appointment time, they get an email description of what they can do to help maintain safety in the surgery by not bringing friends with them, by doing the sanitising wipe. It helps prep them as well of what to expect when they come in, that there's going to be a higher level of infection control when they do turn up, and what kind of treatments that you're able to do for them as well. So feel free to just copy and paste that. So that's another step to make sure that you can restart with confidence as soon as possible. If you haven't restarted yet, I implore you to please do so. The next point on the checklist is if you are working with reduced staff, flag the surgery as dirty already by printing. So what I did with one of the practices that I'm working with on a A4 sheet of paper, on half of it was a big green dot coloured in, and underneath that a big red dot coloured in. And so the dots themselves are about this size. And then fold that piece of paper in half, laminate it, put blue tack on the surgery door, and the minute a patient walks into that surgery, that gets stuck. So the red is facing onto the, like the blue tack's there just to adhere it to the door, and the red dot's facing out. That means that surgery is now considered contaminated. Once the patient has left, if you are functioning on reduced staff because you are not doing that many treatments and you don't want to have too many people in the surgery, then that nurse can confidently come out, process the payment for the patient. Then, oh God, I've clearly got to go to the toilet, and up the phone's rung now, and they have complete confidence that that dentist won't go in that surgery and start touching anything because they know from that red dot it's not clean yet. It's not a ready surgery yet. So it gives everybody an opportunity to get their bits and pieces done. The minute the surgery has been wiped down and the nurse has done her bit, then she flips that red dot to the green dot. The dentist can go, up, that surgery is ready now. The nurse is in the bathroom. I might bring our next patient in and get the pre-procedural mouthwash done. And so that's an additional helpful thing that you can do. Also, including your SMS. So if you're doing a lot of SMS appointment reminders, do whatever you can to make sure you are only getting people who are not medium or high risk coming into your practice, then you might want to add additional content to your SMS reminders for appointment times, saying, making sure that you're feeling 100%, otherwise contact us and we can reschedule your appointment time. What will likely happen is that whatever SMS bundle you've purchased from your software company, it will extend it out from a one message to a two message. So there'll be an added cost to doing that, but it's only short term. There's not going to be that many of these going out, so I think it's still worthwhile. Consider having only one or some of your clinic rooms open. As I said before, I forgot to add that one. So if you've got 5 surgeries and maybe just open 2, the demand probably won't be there to open all 5 anyway. If you've got 2 surgeries, then start off opening up 1, but do what you can to make sure that, okay, what's it costing the practice for the nurse and the receptionist to be here? We have to make sure we earn at least that in order to remain viable. Always have that viability thing in your brain. Whereas with level 3 restrictions, we were seeing patients very randomly, only if desperately needed to, and our headspace was, what's the least amount of treatment we can afford to get away with this patient? Level 2 is different. Level 2, now we can look at a patient and go, okay, now we're trying to get as much work possible within level 2 restrictions done as possible, because we can't continue the way we are and not be making viable decisions for the practice. And as I say, I don't think we need to remain closed anymore. And I don't think we need to remain fearful about opening our doors up and seeing patients, because of all of the extra effort we're going to make sure that the type of patient that comes in is really extremely low risk. We can confidently treat that patient within level 2 restrictions, making sure we're keeping within the guidelines, but we can be confident within those guidelines. The ADA have said you can be confident within these guidelines. So there's the attachments, that's the message to the patient. That's the risk management. We've gone through that. We've gone through the screening questions. And just that little note there, the person that was speaking in that video on the ADA was Professor Sharon Liberali. Sorry about that, Sharon. She is the chair of the Infection Control Committee. And it's got there, so see at the 28 and a half minute mark to see that particular snippet of information, but it is up here in attachments. So the other things that are in the attachments are, I've updated the safety protocol. So download that safety protocol, print it out, discuss it as a team. I've kept it as a Word document so you can add to it and change the information around so it suits your particular practice. I don't know why it's not opening up. But print that off, have it posted in your waiting room, have it posted on your website if you wish, have it posted in the sterilisation room, staff room. But this is just the new way we're doing things at the moment. All of these things, we want to be obviously doing additional things to ensure the safety of everybody. But we don't want to be panicking people and saying it's a different world now, we've got to be very, very fearful. So it's that balance between the two. We are being wholly and solely responsible in what we're doing here, but we're also not panicking anybody. I'm just going to double check a question here. Hey, Julie, your screen looks blurry to us. Okay. Is that when it was 2:28? That was about 7 minutes ago. George, could you possibly put through whether it still looks blurry? Still blurry. Oh, that's no good. That's no good. There's the protocol there, so you can download that and adjust it to suit your particular situation. A lot of it's stuff that we've already covered anyway. Let's double check that. If it might be my share screen, if I stop sharing. Not quite sure what I can do about it. I'm trying to think. I'm in a slightly different position recording today because Charles did his podcast today, and so I've got to keep myself set up here so I don't lose all the video and the podcast audio so while I'm editing it. So I'm hoping that it improves, and I hope it doesn't affect too much with your reading of the Trello card, but I certainly do apologise for that. Hopefully with a reshare, maybe it will write itself. One other thing I'll do, make sure that maybe if I do this, if you can just put through whether that slight adjustment that I've just made, now I'm seeing what you might mean, because I'm appearing blurry to myself. Oh, perfect. Oh, woohoo. Thank you very much. That's great. So that restart pack, if, and as I say, there's the sign to your front door, I think I've covered everything. Please let me know if there's additional things that you need covered there, additional research that you need me to get done in order for you to confidently open up your doors and put that confidence onto your team and to your patients as well. If you need any scripts, any assistance at all, please help. I want to make sure that everybody is doing as much as they can to open their doors up, start seeing patients. I know that with the additional hand scaling, our hands aren't used to it, and that there's been the question raised that can we get as effective work done without the ultrasonic when we're just doing it by hand scaling? I'd like to say to you, surely getting rid of any tartar is better than leaving it all there. And at least you are seeing the patient. So if there's anything obvious that's kind of brooding underneath, you can say, well, there's an area here, it's a periodontal pocket, it's becoming infected or whatever. And so you're actually still seeing the patient and managing them in any way, even if you can't get treatment done that you'd ideally like to get done, you're advising them about what needs to be done and how to help maintain them at this certain level so the condition doesn't get enormously worse. It's always better to be seeing patients, surely. It's always better to remove some plaque and tartar than none at all, surely. As I say, coming from a dental nurse's perspective, that one I'm not quite sure. I hope I'm correct when I'm giving that kind of advice. Be interested to see what you guys think as well with that. So as I said, I will be broaching this topic more of what's it going to take for us all to recover and what do we need to do to it be in order to recover? Can we maintain our original goals? Because it's not going on for 2 years. It's not going on for 6 months. It does seem like the level two restrictions will be eased as well quite quickly. We all seem to be going very well. But I do want to make sure that we have that discussion around, okay, where does that leave us now? How long before we recover long-term? So stay tuned for a future session around that. Okay, team culture. There was a previous blog that I did, and George, you're on the line and you contacted me about this particular blog, and I've got it listed here under activity. So if you click on that link there, you'll see what George and I are talking about. It was called the What Normal Are You Rushing Back To? And it detailed when I was assuming everyone had their doors closed at level three restrictions and we had a lot of team members at home. I thought, what a wonderful time to reflect. How do our team work together? Do they work well together? Are we coming up with brilliant ideas constantly? Are we all supporting each other within the workplace? Are we encouraging each other to grow and develop and become better versions of ourselves? What does our team look like? And are we happy with that? Do we want to return to that? What a tremendous time. I mean, this disruption to normal everyday life at the practice can actually be a really lovely time to go, you know what? Let's really consider what kind of team we were before and is it what we want to come back to? If it's not, let's do something about it. And to gain clarity around that, there's a few helpful things on the site, on the JPPS site that will help you. And they're all detailed here within this blog, which is why I've maintained this link here for you. So the free download that we're talking about are the team member satisfaction survey and the team culture guide. And then the online courses that I encourage you to do are the Building a Successful Team and Transform Your Team Through a Powerful Team Culture. So if you do have some downtime and you want to do a shift in your team culture, take advantage of this little process. And so you may want to modify it somewhat because hopefully a lot of you are actually on site now. This is the way I displayed it in the blog. So on Monday, in their own time, have your team members jump onto the team member satisfaction survey. And so within my website, go to free downloads and second from the top is the team member satisfaction survey. And so then they can just simply download this and complete it. One way this could be done, and certainly let me know if you want to, you could do it through Google Forms. And then it can be all done online. They can submit it to you and you've got a nice little folder that has all of those responses there. But it goes through questions such as, do you enjoy your current role within the practice? If no, what elements would you change? Do you feel well supported by your team members? Do you have any concerns about the manner with which the team operates? Do you feel comfortable with developing your relationship with your clients? There's a whole bunch of questions around people's experience of working in your team, in your practice. What areas are a source of positive feelings for you? What areas are a source of negative feelings for you? So it's not a terribly lengthy questionnaire, but it certainly gives you a world of information. Once you've done that, then you conduct the Zoom meeting with your team, or if you're all on site, get everyone gathered together with your distancing going on as well, and watch the Building a Successful Team via, if you're all at home on Zoom, do it by a share screen so you can all be participating at the same time. So the Building a Successful Team is a good idea to have it, encourage everyone to take notes all the way through, note down any ideas they have. You may even want to, if you're doing it all together using share screen, you can say, if anybody wants to speak, tell me to pause it. We'll get onto ideas straight away. You may remember that from a last session, I mentioned that under the docs and links list within Trello, you've got the JPPS courses, online courses, my idea of how best to go through these online courses. And I do love the thought of having it be collaborative all the way through watching it, in the sense of the minute someone's got something pertinent to say, you do pause it, get their thoughts, because if you wait till the end, they might go, oh, it doesn't really matter, or I've already forgotten my thought anyway. You want to get everyone's participation all the way through. And then the next step is to have one person, allocate one person within your team, and it can be me if you wish, to be the manager of this project itself. That person is going to be the one that's going to go through all the results of the team member satisfaction survey, because you will get more frank answers, more honest answers, if you say it's confidential. That your information won't be shared with anybody. We just really want the truth here. We want to make sure we're making a substantial change to our team that everyone wants. And so that manager needs to be somebody who has got a level of self-awareness, that she can hold confidence, she or he can hold confidence. It might be the owner of the practice if you've got that level of trust with your team members. After that, have everyone then watch the transform your team through a powerful team culture in the same way that you did the original one, the original Building a Successful Team online course. And then conduct a Zoom meeting, or again, gather your team around you and download the free team culture guide. And this takes you through the steps of designing your new and improved team culture. And then you can say, that was then, this is the new now. Let's get really excited about coming back and restarting the business with this new team culture, which is something that we all want. We've all contributed to creating this wonderful vision for our team. We're going to be there for each other, supporting each other, helping each other grow. And this is the new way of doing things now. We've had such a big reset button clicked in our dental lives. It's just the perfect time. I truly believe that. To support this topic more so, I want to just move through a few of the slides that I have in the Team Culture online course. Just going to get myself sorted here, go right to the top. Okay, so first of all, let me just make sure there's no questions going on. No, fantastic. Make sure that I'm still recording. It's wonderful. What is a team culture? The team culture is, so you've got this group of people here. Let me see if I can get my little pointer that will help you know where I'm pointing. We've got our dental team here. We've got our behaviours, our systems, our processes, our attitudes. And then we've got the goals of the practice, something of which may have changed over the past couple of months to be something different. They may have remained the same, and you're passionate about making sure you still reach your goals, which I think is a viable goal to have. Connection between what we're doing and getting where we want to go, our behaviours, our attitudes, the way we interact with one another, is the culture of the practice. The characteristics of a good team with a good team culture are everyone feels safe, respected. There's a high degree of trust. Trust is such an important part of a healthy team culture. Everyone is accountable for what they do, whether it be good or bad. There's a sense of fairness. There is effective communication. We are cheering each other on. We're very supportive of one another, whether they were doing what's considered good things or bad things, things that work for the practice, things that don't work for the practice. There's a level of support there. And so we're encouraging each other to be better versions of ourselves, better team members than we thought possible. There is ownership. I am completely responsible for my lot, for my list of responsibilities. And I have ownership over what I do. There's a kindness that we have with one another. We speak to each other with kindness. We approach each other with kindness. And as I say, there's responsibility. So you are taking responsibility for your contribution to the team, for who you bring to the team, the space that you create within the team. And I'm going through these quickly. The online course goes through these things in a more slow way. I've only got 15 minutes. Your team culture will identify what will my behaviour at work be. This is really telling you what team culture is, how it's different from a philosophy or a mission statement. Team culture is what will my behaviour be? How will I communicate with staff and patients? How can I expect to be treated by others? What can I, as a responsible member of staff, encourage in those around me? What behaviours, responses, and communication is unacceptable and why? So it really, if you were turning up to a workplace, a new dental practice for the first time, you don't know really what's acceptable and what's not. Am I allowed to tell that dentist my version of what's going on there with that patient, if you're another dentist, if you're a dental nurse, am I allowed to go to that dental nurse and say, oh, I've found a better way of doing barriers or wiping over? Am I allowed to say these sort of things, or are they considered taboo? Do I just leave people to their own thing? Am I patronising somebody if I say, that was great the way you spoke to that patient? That was really fantastic. Are they going to take that well? Are they not going to take it well? So the team culture is something that you learn as you go. Even if a company has a stated team culture, that may not be the actual culture. There will be a culture, but it may not be what has been identified as ideal. What the team culture is what you actually experience every day with those team members. So what should your team culture be? Your team culture should promote a feeling of safety for employees, safe from bullying and safe to achieve success. Because in some places, of course, it's not safe to achieve success because you're brand nosing or you're sucking up or look at you, making me look bad with your great performance. You don't want that to be part of your culture. You want a culture that encourages all staff to be the best they can be. Encourages building each other up rather than being in conflict or competition with one another, because the minute somebody feels unsure about their contribution to the workplace, they start to get their defences up. And it can be the cause of conflict. It should motivate staff to achieve all the practice goals, and the team culture should empower all staff to tackle every challenge, knowing that they will have the support of their superiors. Now, this is such a crucial element of it. A lot of people don't extend themselves beyond the standard because they're afraid, what if part of it goes wrong, and then I'm in trouble and I should never have tried to do something good in the first place? What if I put an idea forward and it's thrown out as silly? So we want a team culture to be something that grows your practice and grows the people within your practice, not the opposite. And quite often, it is the opposite. You've just got a bunch of people, and this happens in high blame cultures where who did that wrong? Who did that wrong? That person, they come and point to you in the staff meeting and indicate that you did something wrong. That kind of environment just makes people shrink. They're just constantly trying to avoid getting in trouble and being blamed for anything. And what the other unintended consequence of that kind of environment is that if anybody else is in trouble, you're the first one to say they're in trouble because at least the eyes aren't on me. Just keep looking over there. They're the one that's in trouble and they'll highlight it. So make sure you understand the impact of a good and bad team culture. The other thing that your team culture should do, it should be inspire employees to be better than they are, enlighten employees to be more constructive, to a more constructive and powerful path. State very clearly the expected methods of communication to be used. This is the way we speak to each other here. Sure, you might be frustrated, you might be angry, you might be hurt, but there is a standard of communication here. Just think back to family dynamics and family situations. Growing up, there were some families in my family, for example, no matter what, swearing was never tolerated, unless it was my father swearing. All of us children never, ever swear. Doesn't matter how frustrated you are, how angry you are, you just never swore. Other families, you walk in, they're swearing all over the place. So what happens at your place? When things are challenging, we still have a standard of communication that will not be tolerated if you go below that. Highlight how each member has the power to make or break effective teamwork. That's responsibility. Everyone must feel empowered with that responsibility and take that responsibility seriously. Emphasize each staff member's responsibility in being an effective team member. Encourage hard work, mindful behavior, and celebration of successes. So I'm gonna move my little screen here. Building a powerful team culture is the three C's. These are the three C's that I've identified. I'm gonna move through them quickly, but I encourage you to watch the online course to get a more in-depth look at all of this, because I think with the situation that we're all in, we really do need that team on board sharing our vision for reopening and restarting. We're on reset now. Now we can start being productive again. Now we're back into a viable business again. We need to make sure of that. We need everybody on board with this space, regardless of JobKeeper and what's happening from all of those perspectives. Let's all band together and make sure we're as successful as humanly possible with each growing stage of progress throughout COVID-19 and beyond. Just making sure that I'm not ignoring any questions or anything like that. So communication, care, and can I? I will likely go over, because I doubt I'll get it all done in 7 minutes, but it won't be by long. First up, communication. The four methods of communication that I encourage all of the practices that I work with to establish are, number one, morning huddles, enormously important morning huddles. And what I might do is I might attach the morning huddle, unless I already have had it. Have I already done that? I had a feeling I may have done it. I have not, but I shall. I'm going to attach the morning huddle template that I've got. This card, so you can just quickly, again, it'll be in Word format as well, so you can just quickly download it, adjust it to what suits your practice, and move forward with it as soon as possible, because there's nothing like taking action. The minute you see a great idea or get a great idea from the information that's coming through these coaching sessions, I encourage you, better done than perfect. Don't wait for somebody else to take that job on if they're not taking it on quick enough. Allocate it to somebody. I'd say, I want to start this on Tuesday. If it's on Monday, I want to start this tomorrow morning. Download it quickly. Use it the way it is until you modify it. So swift action, swift and powerful action is what creates an enormous feeling of progress, and it starts creating change immediately. Again, no time like the now. So establish morning huddles, because that is a tremendous way of effective communication and planning the day ahead. Especially again during COVID-19 times, if there's any updates from the ADA, share them at your morning huddle. How's everyone feeling? We're all feeling good. Great, let's move forward with the day. Monthly staff meetings. Ensure that there's a space for someone to write agenda items on that for the monthly staff meetings, whether you're using Trello or Evernote or calling the topic out to the receptionist as you're passing by and she adds it somewhere. It could be on the whiteboard in the staff room. wherever it is, make sure you do have those monthly staff meetings. What I often hear from people is that we don't need monthly staff meetings because we deal with things on the spot. I say everything should be tried to dealt with on the spot. There are some things that require group discussions, such as modification of a system. This system's not quite working well. What about introducing this new system? How do we feel about the system that was introduced a month ago? Is it all still going well? With an active group, there's always stuff to discuss. Yes, there's a heap of stuff that should be discussed at the time, no doubt about it. However, the monthly staff meeting is the opportunity for people to raise issues, raise things they wish to discuss. They can rely, well, I can't talk about it now, but I have got the monthly staff meeting to discuss it. Provide that opportunity to your team. Staff meetings are crucial. Quarterly brainstorming sessions are a wonderful way of bringing in new ideas into your practice and providing your whole team with the opportunity to contribute positively in an excited and dynamic way on the growth of your practice. So a quarterly brainstorming session, I always say it should be at least 2 hours, where you sit down, have cups of tea, a few cookies or whatever there, and everyone is, there's not an agenda, list of agenda items. You're just concentrating on one topic at a time with a quarterly brainstorming session. Put that topic out to the group prior to the session. For example, it might be, how can we make the new patient experience superb here? Let everyone know, we've got a brainstorming session 2 weeks' time on this day for these 2 hours. Do some research, bring out your brilliant ideas, bring them to the brainstorming session. And we're going to throw around some great ideas on how we're going to make sure that every new patient that comes into this practice is treated in such a way they would never have dreamed of, that they will talk about once they leave, and it will make them want to stay here forever. And then because the longer that brainstorming session is, the more systems you can establish within it. So I say at least 2 hours. If you're going to be role-playing a few systems to make sure they feel good, I say do a half day, 3 hours or a half day session. It's worth the money that you lose in production. I promise you it does. It is. And the fourth way is through incidental discussions. And so have that open door policy. If I'm in my office, if I'm in the hallway, unless I'm actively speaking to a patient, you can come to me and have a discussion about something. It might be a quick vent about that staff member that pissed me off. Fine, have a quick vent. Groovy. I'm not going to contribute nastily to that of communication. I'm going to allow you to get it out of your mouth because I understand that unless you get it out of your mouth, you're going to get it out of your mouth to somebody else and that might end up in a bitch session. Better you get it out of your mouth to me because this is where it stops. It doesn't then become a gossip item, destroying other relationships. So sometimes that incidental discussion is a great idea. That patient wasn't happy because of this. I think if we implemented this system, that would reverse that sort of problem. Absolutely. Sometimes I'm having troubles at home and I'm just finding it really difficult to turn up to work every day. Fine, let's organise something around rostering, see what we can do with that. And so make sure you are open to these incidental discussions because if everything gets pushed off to the monthly staff meeting, one, it might be too private to discuss at the monthly staff meeting, so therefore it never gets discussed. And two, sometimes it's important in the now to take the fire out of a particular situation or to get that great idea happening straight away. And so the incidental discussion allows for that. Build a powerful team culture around care as well. So care for one another. Get to know each other, build relationships and show you care about them, show interest in what's important to one another. Acknowledge each other's efforts, both inside the practice and outside the practice. Like start to verbalise the wonderful things or the great things about a particular performance that you enjoy. So rather than listening to the receptionist on the phone, doing an incomplete treatment phone call, follow up, and think, oh, that was good, she did that well. Don't just keep it in your brain. Tell her. Better yet, tell her in front of everybody else. So acknowledge each other's efforts. And this goes the other way around too. If there are any dental receptionists, assistants, practice managers listening right now, and you see the dentist do a magnificent case presentation to the patient, say, that was awesome. You allowed the patient time to ask questions. It flowed really well. I really believe that patient understood everything that you were talking about. You did that really well. So acknowledge each other's efforts. Show appreciation. The number one reason why people leave jobs is due to a lack of appreciation. And when I say show appreciation, not just for the extraordinary, but for the ordinary. Thanks for taking the bins out. It's Thursday night and you did it. So thanks so much for taking those bins out. Means I don't have to. Really appreciate it. So not just for the extraordinary things, acknowledge. And once you get into the habit of acknowledging people for the little minor things, you're doing it all the time. And everyone's very clear. I know how that person feels about my performance because they tell me all the time. Always remember as well, with the appreciation side of things, you should acknowledge the behavior you want repeated. Don't just highlight the behavior you don't want repeated. Otherwise you'll be you're beating down a dog that's constantly being, slapped on the nose. Reward that you want repeated. Reward the behavior and attitudes you want repeated. Encourage team gatherings outside of work. Many practices don't like this because they think that's what ends up being having clicky groups and gossiping and stuff like that. No. If people like each other, genuinely like each other, they're more likely to have a greater tolerance for each other's habits and quirks that aren't always magnificent. It's when they don't like each other that everyone's hypersensitive and hyper-judgmental of each other. So encourage them to have healthy gatherings as well. When I talk about gatherings outside of work, I don't mean going out with them and, getting drunk and wasted and coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not saying that at all, but nice, wholesome, good things. Show kindness, gratitude, and generosity as well. Generosity of spirit. The generosity gene is something that, can't remember his name, head of GE. Oh, doesn't matter. It'll come to me probably later on. Head up GE, he's famous, written lots of books about managing people, and he used to hire people that displayed the generosity gene. He felt that was one of the most important factors of anybody that was going to be a manager or a leader, that they had that spirit of generosity within them. They wanted to see, and they were excited by the success of other people when they were successful. So show kindness, gratitude, and generosity. Going to annoy me that name now. Care, one big question. I'm going to concentrate on this in a separate thing because it's its own thing. And it's the question of what can I do for you? And I describe this very briefly. I'll do it now very briefly, but I will do it in more in depth later on. What can I do for you, I believe, is the most powerful question your practice could ever adopt. It can be your whole culture statement. It can be your whole leadership philosophy. It can be your whole customer service philosophy as well. If leaders ask their team members more often, what can I do for you to help you be more productive, to help you be happier, to help you be more efficient, to help you enjoy your space here more, what can I do? If team members ask each other, what can I do for you to help you get your tasks done today? I've got 10 minutes free, my patient didn't turn up. Receptionist, what can I do for you? Can I do the confirmations for you? What can I do for you? If we all, as team members, ask the patients, what can I do for you to help you be more comfortable in the chair, more comfortable throughout the process of getting treatment done? What can I do for you to help you understand what's happening within your mouth, your conditions, and your treatment plan? What can I do for you? It is an enormously powerful question, and I think this could be a core part of how you function as a team. As I say, I'll talk about it more by the next time or the time after that. There is a blog on this as well and an article. I think there's both. Definitely an article on this on the JPPS site. Now, this is the big fish. Let me just see where time is. Yep. Probably going to be another 5 to 10 minutes. This is the can I, as the third C of team culture for me, is the constant and never-ending improvement journey. It's a version of Kaizen, which is Japanese for change for the good. Constant and never-ending improvement, or can I, is something that Tony Robbins, he is a kind of a self-improvement guru over in America. He's coined this particular phrase. And what I have reflected in my own improvement journey and what I see in dental teams is what constant and never-ending improvement means is improvement is achieved through mistakes, improvement is achieved through practice and repetition, and improvement is achieved outside of our comfort zone into the learning zone. Now, these are three things that I think are lacking in many, many teams. Number one, I don't believe mistakes are a sign of having improved in many teams that I've come across. Mistakes are a sign of bad attitude. That's what I see. It's not the case, but that's what I see. This is how mistakes are perceived in teams, that they are a sign of bad attitude, or you don't listen, or you're incompetent. And I also don't see practice and repetition as being embraced in many teams. If I teach you something once, you should know it all the time. They don't account for the amount of practice and repetition that's required to roll out a new behaviour, a new attitude, a new thought, a new system. I also, because of the above two things, I don't see team members willing to shift into learning zone. It's too unsafe for them. I might get into trouble. I might be seen as incompetent. I don't want to feel silly. And so these three areas are key, crucial to implementing a healthy team culture in your practice, a practice that you want to grow and develop and get better all the time. You want your practice to achieve constant and never any improvement. Am I wrong? I think you all want that. But in order to reach that goal, these three points underneath must be at play. You must see, believe with every cell of your leadership body that improvement is achieved through making mistakes, that improvement is achieved through practice and repetition, and that improvement is achieved outside of our comfort zone, into our learning zone. So what do I need to do as a leader to make it safe and desirable for my team members to shift into learning zone? Mistakes policy. This is a beautiful mistakes policy. It was actually, it listed in Charles Purvis's second book, Passionate Performance, and it was inspired by 3M America, not 3MSB or 3M Australia. And we've just tweaked it ever so slightly to be relevant to dental teams. Mistakes are a sign of having tried. We will forgive honest mistakes that are made in the pursuit of legitimate practice goals. We learn by mistakes and they become part of our collective knowledge. Mistakes born of negative attitude are not to be repeated. So it covers that. It covers the ones that just Mr. Lazy, Miss Lazy's just kind of coming along to destroy our team culture. Come on. If it's born of a negative attitude, it's not to be repeated. That's not tolerated. However, mistakes are a sign of having tried. We will forgive honest mistakes that are made in the pursuit of legitimate practice goals. We learn by mistakes and they become part of our collective knowledge. Can you imagine making a mistake and going, we can build a system around that, make sure that never happens again. What a glorious mistake. That was such a crucial mistake to make because now look at the system we've got. Beautiful. A legendary American basketball coach, John Wooden, I love his quote. If you are not making mistakes, you aren't doing anything. You want to be making mistakes. You want to be progressing, taking action, growing. Just quickly on the repetition and practice that's required. Repetition is a crucial part of learning. In memory, the more times patterns of thought are repeated, the more likely you'll be able to recall information. So if you want somebody to remember something, understand it needs to be remembered again and again and again and again, and then it becomes automatic. Then it becomes second nature. Not after being told once, not after doing it once. If you've got a new system in place, that morning huddles, let's start doing morning huddles. They're going to be done every single morning. It'll take 1 week for that to become an established routine. If you're tracking KPIs and it's something you've got to remember to do, this new KPI I'm tracking, I've got to remember to do that every month, it's going to take 2-3 months to remember to do it because there's so much time in between the repetition. It's going to still take the same number of times. If it's even more random, once a year, gosh, you need to put a reminder in your diary because no one's going to remember that after a year. Aristotle said, it is frequent repetition that produces a natural tendency. If you want all the systems in your practice to be a natural tendency, they need to be frequently repeated in order to get there. And Paulo Coelho, routine has nothing to do with repetition. To become really good at anything, you have to practice and repeat, practice and repeat until the technique becomes intuitive. So don't begrudge the number of times people have to hear information, do a particular thing in order for it to become a natural tendency. Embrace that. Provide the opportunity for that. The learning zone. So we've got the comfort zone where we are lifeless. This is taken from somebody, another site, lifeless. I'm not quite sure if it's critically lifeless, but it's very comfortable. Secure, unchallenged. It is unchallenged. You become bored there, absolutely. It's stable, safe, and easy. And many dental teams function in this place. But then we go, well, we'll shift out of the blue into the red. Then you've got panic zone. Some places with panic zone, it's fearful, tense, exhausted, and stressed. That's a bad space to be. But what we do want is people to be in the learning zone, just pushing themselves out of comfort. And that's where it gets more exciting. It's exhilarating. We feel challenged. We are willing to risk. And we are expectant of ourselves to become better, of our environment to become better, things to become better. In order for us to encourage our team members and ourselves to be in this space, we need to embrace everything that that space brings up for people, make it safe for them, allow them to make mistakes, allow them to have to repeat things in order to get better. And the competency grid is a lovely, quick example of where people are at in that learning zone. Very quickly, imagine yourself with driving a car. You're 2 years old, you have no idea how to drive a car, you are completely clueless as to what needs to be done, why it needs to be done. These thoughts don't even enter your brain. You are functioning from unconscious incompetence. You are unaware of the skill and your lack of proficiency. This is highly comfortable. This is comfort zone stuff. Ignorance is bliss, yeah? Then you're 17, you've got your learner's permit. You jump into the car, and all of a sudden you become very conscious about your incompetencies. You are aware of the skill, but you are not yet proficient. How, it's like you try to put the brake on, you all jolt forward because you've hit the brake too far, too hard. Acceleration, choo, you take off, it's all too much. You become very, very conscious of where your incompetencies lie. This is uncomfortable. This is learning zone. And when people start to understand that this space is what prevents them from pushing themselves into learning zone and keeps them in comfort zone. But when they are reassured that they'll be supported in this incompetency zone and that they'll be given time to repeat and make mistakes, repeat the task and make mistakes, and therefore, because you're getting better at that skill, more competent during your mistake making and your repetition, it's temporary. This uncomfortable space is temporary. Then you can happily go into conscious competence. You are able to use the skill, but only with effort. So you can now go for a drive down the freeway. If anybody was having a social conversation with you at the time, you wouldn't be listening to them because you still have to concentrate. Where are the traffic? How am I indicating? Am I under the speed limit? What's going on? You're still so conscious about your skills, but you're feeling levels of competency grow. And then you'll finally, and this is still learning zone, this area. And then you get into unconscious competence. You can drive from here to Queensland, having multiple conversations with people in the car, and you still get there safely because you are now performing that skill from an automatic subconscious part of your brain. You are so competent, you don't need to think about every single thing you're doing anymore. And that's unconscious competence. And this we've shifted right back into comfort zone. So what we want is to be able to move our staff members through new attitudes, new behaviours, new systems. We want to move them through this grid because they'll go through this grid, but we never want to push them into panic zone. We never want them to feel fearful, tense, exhausted and stressed. If they are, we are not supporting them properly in this learning zone. Maintaining a powerful team culture. So one area that I accidentally didn't include the other slide in here, and that's just the importance of feedback. And so being able to tell somebody you're doing that new task really well because of this, this, and this. An area that could see you improve even more so is this. but you're tackling it well, and I really appreciate the effort you're putting into it. So keep providing that feedback. I'll talk more about the environment that you can create where you can actually have your team members request feedback. Feel driven by feedback. Feel, oh my God, I just want more feedback, because I get better and better so quickly with this feedback. It's such a safe environment that the feedback's not a bad thing. It's exactly what I want, and I live off it. I thrive off this willingness to constantly improve what I'm doing. So we'll talk more about that when I've got a bit more time. I'll add it to one of our future agenda items because it's so powerful. So maintaining a powerful team culture, just make sure you do talk it up. Make sure it's alive all the time. So keep it as part of an ongoing discussion. Intend to speak about it daily. I know it seems laborious. A couple of sentences will just remind your team that just wasn't the spoken thing at the team meeting that's forgotten now. Ah, we're still doing it. Oh, we're still doing it. Oh, we're still doing it. Oh, we're still doing it. It may seem a lot of effort. However, it doesn't take long, and the impact on this has on the statement's influence is huge. Live it. If you are not rolling out that new team culture yourself, do not expect anybody else to do it. You are the example. Follow the leader. Acknowledge others' engagement. So when you see others actually activating this new team culture you've got going on, call it out. I can see what you're doing. I love it. Thank you. That is exactly what we need in the team culture. Thank you. Encouragement. Reward the behavior you want repeated. I think that was my final one. Oh, yeah. So that team culture guide, get your team members to do that. If you want to go down that path, get your team members to go ahead, fill out that team culture guide, get all their feedback, let them know, I really want you to be frank and honest. I want to reset our team culture to be something glorious that we've all chosen moving forward. Those five questions, I love those five questions. Where have we been? Where are we now? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? And what role will each one of us play in getting there? Powerful five questions, those ones. So if you need my assistance throughout that process, please let me know. During this free coaching, whew, get me working hard for my JobKeeper. I'd love it. So let me just stop sharing there. So I hope that's been helpful. And I'll just share one more time, because if there's any questions while I'm doing this, please raise them now. And get rid of that. So we have done today. We can get rid of the top priority because we've just completed this task. Tick that off. Tick the agenda item off. In the attachments, remember in the activity, there is the practice assessment. Feel free to do that. Submit it to me for any feedback that I can offer you and help that I can offer you. Go ahead and get the team culture thing happening. That's the blog. It's got the links to the team culture guide as well. I've got it also attached as a PDF within the card itself. Once the recording of today comes through, I will, instead of saying register here, it will say recording, and it will have the link to the recording. If you've ever had to do a password in the past, that was a new thing to get the recording. That was a new thing that Zoom put in that I've now defaulted that we don't need to have passwords, so you shouldn't need any passwords going forward. Our next session, I'm going to hover over that card, put L for label, change it from mid priority by clicking on off mid onto top priority. That's our very next meeting, live session number 4, Wednesday night, 5:00 Eastern Standard Time, where we've got our special guest speaker, Andrew Lee of Health Practice Digital. If you've got any comments that you'd like me to make sure that I raise with Andrew throughout, if you want to attend the live session, ask those questions yourself, please do so. But it's going to be a great session. I tell you, every single time I speak to Andrew, it gets me excited about the possibilities of advertising and promoting our services in that way, especially when he shares with you the impact and the results that other practices are achieving. It's just fantastic. I hope that everyone has been, no more questions. I hope you've all enjoyed today's session. I look forward to seeing you on Wednesday. No doubt I'll be emailing you with something in between time. And have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. I hope you've got a Sunday roast cookie. I'm going to have roast pork. I'm looking forward to going out and getting all that. So enjoy. I'll check you all later. Thanks so much.